It's a pretty incredible time of worship. I'm grateful. Thank you. I'm also grateful for our projectionist, Gail. She apparently was able to get my PowerPoint presentation to work, despite the fact that I brought her the wrong type of file very late this morning. And so, yes, it's good to be here. Well, I can't help but feel like there is some correlation between the weather and my participation in our services on Sunday morning. About 6 weeks ago, I was asked to open the first service, and we got about 6 inches of snow. It was the last Sunday in March. And here we are again. So I think what I'll do is sign up for a service mid to late November, and I'll just, yeah, take the summer off. Well, we are continuing our service, we're continuing our series in the Psalms today, and we are going to look at Psalm 13. And roughly speaking, the subject, or one of the subjects of today's passage, is emotion and dealing with emotion. Emotions are a normal and a regular part of human life, and they're also a normal and a regular part of our spiritual lives as well. We're going to be talking not only about emotion, but about strong, deeply felt emotion. So I thought we'd start with some photographic evidence of strong emotion in real life. This young gentleman, I'm not sure if you can tell from the picture, but the electrical outlet has those clear plastic plugs in it. Some cruel overseer has prevented him from getting his fingers in there any longer. He wasn't allowed to electrocute himself. Next, we have maybe not the most heart-wrenching of emotion, but profound sadness, to be sure. I can't believe that Mommy was not willing to carry him during her half marathon. I feel like this, on the inside, I feel like this, he's got his fork, I'm ready for dinner, dinner is not ready for me. Yeah, I could go on for hours with these. Yeah, that couldn't fit into Dora's minivan. This one is my second favorite, and we'll finish with my very favorite. So, really distraught about having to go anywhere. Don't confuse the situation with facts, Mom and Dad. I'm just upset that we're going somewhere. Not going anywhere. And last but not least is my absolute favorite. It's a young man with a balloon behind him. And if we can't get it, Gail, that's okay. He'd asked his mom to pass him the red balloon, and so you have this picture of him sitting on the floor mid-tantrum. The balloon is kind of right over his shoulder, and the caption is, Mommy won't give me the balloon, you know, so. Pretty funny stuff. These images were taken from a website called ReasonsMySonIsCrying.com, and it's a blog that's regularly updated by, actually, I think it's a stay-at-home dad somewhere on the East Coast. It's a clever and entertaining outlet for parents who find themselves dealing with tremendously strong emotional outbursts for somewhat minor reasons, and I can relate. Well, I want to distinguish this morning between two types of real emotion, because despite the fact that those may be inappropriately strong reactions, the kids are still feeling real emotion there. The level of response may be somewhat unwarranted by the circumstances, but there are many situations in our lives where the emotional response that we feel is completely warranted by the situation. And that's the subject of Psalm 13. Dealing with intense emotions, especially due to difficult circumstances, within the context of our relationship with God. So let's turn to Psalm 13. We can read it together and sort of explore what the passage has to say. Psalm 13, Psalms are found in sort of the middle of the Old Testament. So Psalm 13 begins like this. To the choir master, a psalm of David. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord. O Lord my God, light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him, lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. Before we go too much further, let's just take a moment to pray and ask the Lord's blessing on his word. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you created us as emotional beings and that we have feelings. And God, we thank you that you share that in your character. You also experience emotion. God, I ask that you would give us insight this morning as we study your word. Help us to more clearly understand our relationship with you and the depth of the relationship you desire to have with us. God, we thank you for your word, and we ask that you would be glorified by it this morning, and that you would make us extra aware of your presence with us this morning. Speak to us this morning, God, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, I want to start our conversation this morning about Psalm 13 with just trying to answer the question, what does this passage have to say to us? What's the main idea? The topic being dealt with is the pouring out of our deepest emotions, particularly in difficult times. And what I think this passage is about, I think that this passage shows us that by honestly pouring out our most difficult emotions to God, we meet him face to face and we are renewed. Now, obviously that's not perfect. If that's what God wanted to say in Psalm 13, that's what it would have said. At the same time, I hope that it will be useful to try and unpack some of those ideas and sort of look at them piece by piece. The first thing that I want to focus on is how honest this psalm really is. The emotions that David is feeling are raw and open and laid right out there, right before God. He feels abandoned, threatened, possibly even as though God is not holding up his end of the bargain. This is David's heart laid bare before the Lord. It leads me to wonder, how honest and open can you and I be with God? It might seem obvious. There's not really much sense in trying to mislead someone who knows everything. But at the same time, I find myself often either making excuses for God, or I'm quick to jump to an answer, a solution, a reason. It isn't natural or easy for me to face pain and suffering and just lament, to ask, why is this happening? Maybe the level of honesty in this psalm was a bit foreign to me because we've lost the art of lamenting. A lament is what we call the honest outpouring of painful emotions. It has a place in our spiritual lives, and I think that's one of the things that I learned from this passage, that the ability to lament is a spiritual discipline that, like other spiritual disciplines, I have to cultivate and develop in my life. Now, on the other hand, the alternatives that David has, he's experiencing these emotions, his alternatives for pouring them out there before God aren't actually all that great. For example, one alternative would be to bottle them up and keep them buried inside, to put on a brave face and sort of soldier on with life. You've had the experience when people, even though it's maybe one of your most difficult days, someone asks you how you're doing, you say, I'm doing okay. You know, either they don't have time or, you know, sometimes we keep our trouble, our sorrow to ourselves, neatly boxed up inside. Well, if you're anything like Michelle and I, you have, from time to time, the unpleasant task of cleaning out the fridge. I am a self-professing optimist when it comes to the shelf life of leftovers. Michelle, my lovely wife, who has cleanliness and sanitation as very high values, she's a definite realist, but particularly in college, even with my optimism, I have definitely found a wide variety of science projects in the back of my fridge. Definitely beyond the period of... See, when it comes to leftovers, my general rule of thumb is if I can remember when we ate the meal, they're probably still good. The length of my memory and the length of the viability of food, roughly about the same. Science is so interesting, especially when it's growing on old food. The point that the reason I bring this up, long overdue leftovers are kind of like buried emotions. The longer you leave them bottled up, the more poisonous they become. Buried emotion condenses, it kind of goes through a process of, well, the word I used is putrefies, but I was trying to find some other word. But buried emotion kind of, if you give it long enough, it becomes a bitterness that isolates us from God. I think the great philosopher Schreck sums up this point nicely. He says, better out than in, that's what I always say. I think when it comes to emotions, that's probably true. By the way, the irony of particularly a young man giving a 25-minute conversation on sharing his emotions has not missed me. I no longer have any leg to stand on. I will be sharing my emotions on a regular basis, particularly with my wife. Anyhow. Before we leave this idea of honesty, I wanted to note that this psalm is actually a worship psalm. The superscript, or the little note at the beginning of Psalm 13, indicates to the choir master, and that denotes the fact that this psalm was used during the corporate worship services of the Israelite nation. Does this seem like a bit of an odd hymn to you? Can you imagine us singing this song during our worship time? Welcome to Balmoral. If you're a guest, we thank you for being here, and we want to extend a special welcome. Join us, stand, and we're going to sing a song. How long, O Lord, will you abandon me? It's just not the tone that we typically take with our worship services, is it? Ironically, I believe we're going to close our service with a song that is directly based on this psalm. So the Lord has a sense of humor as well, which I appreciate. I have to assume that David had learned that the process of sharing our painful emotions with God was important enough that his people ought to be reminded that they had that option, and not only that option, but that they should take advantage of that option. And perhaps this hymn was a regular reminder that they could share their difficult and trying emotions with God, that he wanted to hear those things, and how they ought to do that. Maybe this hymn served as a regular reminder that they should be bringing their troubles, their pain, their suffering to the Lord. And I think it still continues to be a reminder to us of that same thing. Well, I want to touch for a second on these difficult emotions that I've been referencing. It's been somewhat challenging to look at this psalm because it is purposefully generic in nature. And what I mean by that is at the beginning of the psalm, we're told that this is a psalm that's written by David. Many of the other psalms, we are told what's happening in David's life. Here in Psalm 13, we aren't given any reference. We're not given any details. This psalm could have been written at several different points in David's life, and I think that's the point. The ability to lament, to share our painful emotions with God, isn't specific to a particular situation. It's applicable to many varied situations. Several verses in Psalm 13 refer to different topics, different troubles, different issues. David mentions being surrounded by enemies on a number of occasions. In verse 2, he references brokenheartedness. In verse 3, when he mentions, "Don't let the light of my eyes go out," typically that language was used when referring to illness, particularly grave illness. Feeling abandoned by God is highlighted. So this psalm was written to apply in many circumstances. It's about how we respond to all different kinds of pain and suffering that we experience. Well, next, I want to highlight the fact that David pours out his heart before God. We've touched on honestly sharing our emotions, and I want to focus a little bit on the fact that David directs this communication directly to the Lord. Does it matter who we share these emotions with? As long as we get them out to someone, is that enough? Clearly, the psalmist brings his grief before the Lord, and I think that point is worth emphasizing. It's not that sharing our pain with family members or friends is bad. I'm sure that probably would be helpful as well. It's just that lamenting to your best friend doesn't bring you into face-to-face communion with the Creator of the universe. I also wanted to just mention, God is sovereign over his word, and he includes what he wants to include in his word. And I think the fact that this psalm is in here tells us something about the heart of God, about his desire to have a relationship with us that extends to those most difficult times and those most painful emotions. And I didn't have that written down anywhere, but I think that's an important thing. And an important reason that we ought to be sharing those difficult and trying periods of our lives with the Lord. I may have shared this with you before, but last summer I was a little bit worried about the Sunday school. Michelle and I are in charge of, responsible for our Sunday school, and a couple of things had changed. This year wasn't going to look like last year. There was a little bit of uncertainty about how the kickoff in the fall was going to go. I was stressed out and worried about this, much more so than I should have been, and I definitely could have used this discipline in my life at that time. So after 3 weeks of turning this issue over in my mind and sort of carrying it around with me, I had spoken with Michelle about it on several occasions. I talked with other members of the congregation about, you know, I was not certain about how this was going to work. Finally, I sat down before God. 3 weeks later, sat down before God with this challenge that I was facing, which, you know, the process of turning a molehill into a mountain is something that I'm quite good at, and so I've accomplished that over this 3 week period. So this enormous challenge I was facing, I finally brought it before the Lord. So in my experience, God is incredibly gentle with me. As I'm writing out the minute details of how serious this issue is, God sort of I don't exactly know how to describe it. He impressed on me an idea. He sort of nudged me. If you picture yourself in a completely dark room with your eyes closed, sort of trying to find your way around, that's what was going on in my mind. And then all of a sudden, as you're there, there's right next to you this incredibly strong, almost like a rock boulder, that it doesn't like knock you right over, but all of a sudden you're aware that it's there, and you're aware that there is no moving this item, that there is a stability and permanence to what is going on here, that like it's unshakable. And so that's the best way that I can describe the way that as I'm pouring out stuff to God, all of a sudden like truth hits my brain, and it's like, well, we're not, that there's no negotiating on that point. That one sticks. Yeah. So that happens to me as I'm pouring out my situation before God. So first I'm detailing the pressure I'd put on myself to make the Sunday school life-changing, because if I don't, you know, the little lives of these children may not be changed. We have an opportunity here to change the trajectory of their life. They could be on a path to walking with you forever. Who knows whose lives they might change? And God sort of, the idea appears next to me, doesn't knock me over, but I'm struck with the idea that, you know, he loves and knows and cares for these children far more than I ever will, and he has that situation under control. Oh, okay. Next, I started to chronicle the missed opportunities, the potential for relationships with families in our communities, people in Rosedale and Timberstone, if our Sunday school isn't whatever I think it should be or ought to be. And again, the same idea sort of penetrates my brain. You mean the families who are lost and who are seeking and who are hurting and for whom my heart breaks more than you could ever know? Yes, those are the ones that I mean. Finally, I relented, submitted to God, and acknowledged that he is bigger than my worries about Sunday school. It took me a while. The point I'm trying to make is that I had talked this issue over several times with Michelle, with friends of mine. I'd been carrying it around and having conversations with myself about this for a really long time. I didn't have peace about this issue until I'd taken it before the Lord. So sharing our emotions, especially in really difficult times of our lives, with the Lord is an important discipline. Well, I want to turn for just a second and focus your attention on the gap, the white space between verses 4 and 5. Between verses 4 and 5, we see a monumental shift in tone, in focus, in subject, and in perspective. One of the things we don't see is a change in circumstances. David has the same problems and faces the same enemies that he did in verse 1. Nothing is different here in verse 5, but something has changed. Let me suggest to you that David's perspective is changed because he has met with Almighty God. I have a bit of a confession to make. I am a stubborn individual, and I'm working on it. I've passed it on to my children. Joshua is 18 months, and we're trying to get him to say please. So this morning he wanted a banana, and so he can yell nana, and he can yell all kinds of other words and reach for things and point, and like he's pretty good at telling you what he wants. Then I said, say please, nothing, not going to do it. Later I gave him half a chocolate chip cookie, which, parenting issues aside, he had no trouble coming up with please when the half a cookie was gone. Please, 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 all over the place. Anyways, so he's inherited that early on. Well, if I were the writer of Psalm 13, I think it would have been much lengthier. Going back to that moment as I'm pouring out, you know, this worry that I have about the Sunday school before God, the moment that God impresses on me his sufficiency and complete ability to take care of that and that I should let go of that, in that moment, it took me a little while to release my grip on this big problem that I have. You recognize that God is speaking to your life, and you recognize that God is saying, I have control of this. David's response between verse 4 and 5 is to let go and turn to see God and worship. My response in that moment was to say, now, granted that you make a good point, but just a second, let's loop back to that in a moment. Perhaps I haven't clearly articulated or used the right words about quite how large this problem is. And so it took me a little while to let go of that problem. Perhaps you can relate to that. Yeah. I think the recognition of God, the awe that comes from meeting with him, and when we choose to let go of those issues that we're holding on to, is a big part of the shift that happens between verses 4 and 5. And it may not have all been between verse 4 and 5. I can see David getting nudged a couple times in this psalm. That's the only way I could think to describe the process of God sort of injecting his idea into my mind. I can see David getting nudged a couple times in this psalm. In verse 1 and 2, David feels abandoned and alone. After verse 2, in that white space between 2 and 3, a nudge. Perhaps as if God were saying, David, I am here. I have always been here. And so in verses 3 and 4, David, no longer abandoned and alone, begs for God's intervention. And after verse 4, another nudge, perhaps to say, I am entirely capable. I am entirely sufficient to totally take care of you. And in verse 5 and 6, David's circumstances are eclipsed by the awesome presence of God, the presence of eternal goodness. And David worships. David's circumstances are no different in verses 5 and 6, but his perspective has been reoriented by meeting face to face with the eternal God. The last thing I want to highlight is the impact of meeting with God face to face, and that is that we are renewed by his goodness. Michelle and I travel a couple times a year to visit her parents in Northwest Washington, and more often than not, we'll drive down to Calgary, hop on a one-hour flight over the mountains, and land in Abbotsford. Well, on the return trip, almost without exception, it will be drizzling rain. Not real hard, you don't really get soaked, but it's kind of cold, and the clouds are about 6 inches above your head. That's how it feels in Abbotsford most of the time. And if you've been in the Lower Mainland or if you've traveled there, then you know that. Recently, I can't remember whether it was 6 months ago or longer, but as you climb out of the clouds, I made an interesting observation. The weather forecast for our planet is sunshine forever, every single day. It's a really interesting experience to leave the dreary rain as you kind of go through. There's a period of gray where you can't see anything, and then you pop out into this magical world. Looks like cotton balls everywhere, and sunshine. Perfectly beautiful sunny day if you get high enough, if you get to the right elevation. Sometimes the clouds block out the sun and we can't see it, but it is still shining. Just like the sun that shines every day, God's goodness is never ending, his glory is never fading, his steadfast love is forever faithful, and he is completely sufficient for all we need. Sometimes our circumstances keep us from seeing it. The process of laying our hearts before God allows us to get through the stuff that we're feeling and get back to that place where we acknowledge and recognize and know God's goodness. The only thing that I'll add to that is I think it's important to make the distinction that that analogy is not perfect in that God is not only present with us when we are beyond our difficulties. He desires to be there with us at all stages. And yet the process of laying out what it is that we're feeling, honestly, which is not easy, allows us, it took me probably 3 weeks to figure out what was going on between verses 4 and 5. I spent a lot of time thinking about where do you start? How do you start here and end here? What changes? And it finally hit me about 3 weeks into thinking about this that it's the process, it's right in front of you. It's what he's doing. It's pouring out the emotion that he's feeling allows him to get to verses 5 and 6, even though he starts in verse 1. So, overall, hopefully that sounds good in theory. The process of emptying our raw emotion before God, only to be renewed by his presence, hopefully that's an idea that resonates with you a little bit. But how does it work when the rubber really meets the road? What is it like to lament in real life? First of all, you should know that I feel terribly unqualified to answer that question. I would like to, however, share my recent experience in trying to put this into practice in my life. Michelle went to college in BC at Trinity Western University, and she was part of a tight-knit community of young people that started a ministry, which is still in existence today, called Drime. And Michelle keeps in touch with many of the folks that are involved in that, or the relationships that she developed during that time. About 6 months ago, a friend of hers from college named Krista found out that she had contracted breast cancer. Since that time, and I don't even know if it's been 9 months or it's been a while anyhow, and Michelle's been following her journey. She started a blog online, and so her friends and family members can keep informed on how she's doing and that sort of thing. And so it's been fairly easy for Michelle to follow along her journey. It's been particularly difficult, I think, for Michelle, because Krista and her husband have a little boy who is about the same age as Joshua, maybe just a little bit younger. And so there's sort of, I practiced like 3 times. This didn't happen when I was practicing. So she keeps us up to date, and it's been really difficult for Michelle to watch. And until recently, I had more or less listened as Michelle processed this journey that Krista is on, but I hadn't really been there from an emotional perspective. I'd been sort of around, perhaps near the situation, but emotionally I wasn't really invested in that situation. Well, last week, Michelle and I signed up for a 24-hour prayer vigil for Krista. You can't really pray for someone without being emotionally invested in that process. It was really painful for me to pray for some of the specific requests that Krista had. One of the requests that she had was that her son, whose name is Mateus, that he would learn to say mommy. That was one of her heart's desires. And actually, Krista posted last night, and that prayer request has been answered, that he knows how to say mama. She also prayed that despite the fact, due to her treatments and other things, she isn't really able to spend a lot of time taking care of her son. One of her prayer requests was that despite the fact that her son is basically being cared for by other people, that he would still choose her as a really special person in his life. It was hard for me to enter into what it would be like to see just the idea that your little child, who doesn't know, at that age, they don't know what they're doing, but that the possibility that he might be pulling away already because he just doesn't spend as much time with her. And this was really, really difficult for me to enter into and pray for her. And it's not even my situation, for Pete's sake. Acknowledging and communicating these emotions with God was not easy at all. It was really difficult. Well, we did pray for Krista. And through that process, God was faithful to meet with us in the pain. I felt like I was heard, and he was faithful to respond. And I felt God suggest to me in my own grief that as I choose to enter into the pain that Krista must be going through and the grief that she's going through, maybe ultimately she'll have less pain to endure. Maybe I can carry some of the load for her. I hope that that's true. At the same time, I'm still broken with sadness, and I wouldn't wish her experience on anyone. My conclusion from that small snapshot of trying to put this into practice, conclusion from that was that entering into and sharing the difficult emotions that we go through in life does, in fact, result in a more intimate connection with God.